Hi, it's Diane, and it is Wednesday, November 30th. Wow. And I'm here with the 1 o'clock older kids group. So far, we have Tina and Jane and Jody. Let's start with check-ins and celebrations. Who can start us off?
Oh, this is Jane. I could start.
Thank you, ma'am.
I think the only thing I can celebrate is biting my tongue and not saying things that would set my child off into a worse state. So just doing that was really helpful. I've been working on that a lot.
Well, sometimes that's kind of all we can do is to not add fuel to the fire and completely relate. So, Tina.
Hey, let's see. Checking in, celebrating. I'm trying to think of something specific to celebrate. You think by now I would have this sort of thing thought out ahead of time? Trying to think of something specific to celebrate. I guess there's some definitely an increasing growth pattern seen in taking more responsibility for things and making efforts to, do things without having to be reminded. So there's that.
So you're noticing some progress in independence. I'm trying to think about the conversation.
Yes, like. Instead of, I don't have anything to wear, so or my clothes are dirty, and I just either wear them dirty or ask mom to clean them. I'll just go wash them myself. I mean, little things like that I see, happening that, just show every now and then in order. Oh, it's the day you work in the evening, so it's my turn to do the dishes. And it's not 80% of the time, so obviously it's not the expectation, but I see it more and more. Just little bits. Oh, it's Sunday. Yes, this is the day I have to take the trash out to the street. Every now and then, it used to be a constant battle, but now every now and then I do see an effort to do it and to actually do it right. So this is good.
Well, and I think that's the piece. We talked about that in the last call 2 weeks ago when we were talking about expectations and the fact that there's all these steps in between me doing it and them doing it. And, if we can celebrate, wow, they did it with only one reminder this time, or they did it without me reminding them at least once this week, or whatever it is, you can see those steps, and some of them happen naturally, and some of them happen because there's, external intervention, whatever it is. But I love that you're doing some celebrating, Jody. I'm sorry, that was Tina. So, Jody, how are things going for you?
Well, we had a good Thanksgiving. We had a nice day together as a family, which was great. My son's home from college. My daughter managed her time as far as her social life went, so I guess that's good. And then my son kind of raised some alarm bells with me because he's going to have over a month off at Christmas break, and I'm a little worried that there's going to be a whole lot of laying around not doing anything, and we have to have a plan for this because nobody will be happy.
Well, and of course, you're thinking about it now and you're wondering, okay, what are we going to do? Is that a place that you want to take aim for a conversation today, Jody?
Yes, that would be great.
So how would you bottom line? It was something to do with kind of staying busy during vacation or getting clear on what expectations are? Wasn't sure kind of what you felt like the focus is.
Well, maybe you can help me figure that out. So, I mean, at one point he talked about getting a job because he'll have lots of time. But then when he was home at break, it was like he just wanted to chill out and then go see his friends. And I get that it was just a week's time. And I get that, they don't always say what they mean. That he could come around, but if we're not clear on expectations, tensions will get high with somebody lying around while other people are working, and so I don't know if that's an expectation
So there's several pieces to it that are coming up for me. It's one is kind of how do you engage in the conversation, how do you you know, how do you solve the problem you're trying to solve is, you know, what's your agreement around Christmas break? And so there's part of it is kind of how to start the conversation. Part of it is to figure out what your boundaries are, if you're going to put boundaries up as parents. You know, part of it is kind of helping him figure out what does he really want versus what does he say he thinks he wants, and how does he kind of keep the motivation going. I mean, so there's lots of pieces in that. It sounds, though, like what you want to take aim on is coming up with a plan to at least a starting plan for Christmas break with your son being home from college. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. How's that feel?
Promising, hopeful.
Okay, cool. All right. So, Jane, where do you want to take aim today?
I want to take aim on how to help my son get rid of 4F on his grade report.
Okay.
Which is big. That's a lot of classes.
So, I'm going to ask you a couple questions to see if we might need to narrow it down a little bit. So is it 4 missing assignments, or is it 4 grades, 4 classes where he's getting F?
The entire total grade is F for the whole class.
Okay.
It's 4 classes.
And so at this point, what do you know now? Do you know how he can get caught up in those classes? Do you need to figure out how he can get caught up? Where are you at in the process of uncovering what is really going on and what the opportunity is at this point?
So in the process, I decided to get curious, and I went on and printed out, and then I wrote down how many were missing and how many were actually where he got a poor grade on a quiz or a test or an assignment. To me, that would be not knowing the material that well, and the other would be just not handing in work. So it looked to be equal, but then they weight things, like the homework's only 10%. And I saw 40 and 45% for the other. So it's more performance-related than it is missing assignments or homework. And
okay, and so where are you at in terms of engaging him in the conversation, Jane?
That's where it all broke down. He came home from school, and I said, before you get on Xbox, I need you to look on the online grades. And so later on, when I saw him at dinner, I said, did you look? And he said, yeah, so what did you see? He said there were some not good grades. So it's hard for him to accept it, and it's also he gets overwhelmed. So what he did was, I don't know if it was because he was truly this tired, because he does get tired, he slept and laid around on the sofa, and he went to bed after dinner and never got up again. So he slept through the whole night. I think he's overwhelmed with the fact of having 4 F's and that he's sunk. So
it makes sense. So that's kind of, I love that you kind of got curious in this, Jane, and that's why I let you go a little bit before we decide where you're taking aim, because I can't tell whether it's about getting him engaged and, you know, at the table with even talking about improving the grades, or if it's about helping him stay on track with a plan that he already has for himself, or whether it's figuring out how to deal with the fact that these may be grades that he's going to have for the rest of the semester. I mean, I was trying to figure out where you were at. So reflecting now, where do you think the place to take aim is specifically?
I want to have a conference with each one of his teachers. That's 4.
So time out. So can I interrupt you? Because you're jumping right to the solution. Okay.
Okay.
So let's take aim on the challenge. So is the challenge getting him involved? Is the challenge helping him to finish what he's already decided? Or is the challenge kind of dealing with the reality of what is right now?
The challenge is getting him involved in a conversation about it and then to make a plan.
Okay, great. So you're at the point where you want to take aim on how to get him engaged in this conversation. Because I think that if you jump to, because it's so easy to jump to, well, the solution is let's just call all the teachers. And you know that part of this is getting him involved so that you have his buy-in so that you can, the two of you can figure out what the best way is to approach those teachers, so, or the teachers. So how does it feel to say you're going to take aim on engaging him in the conversation?
I would like to do that.
Okay.
But I don't know how.
Yep. Well, that's why you're here. Tina, where do you want to take aim?
Well, I'm just kind of going to float along with her there. I'm taking aim on two grades. And in my, I actually have done this, started doing this, and I asked my son, do you want me to, you know, help you with this? Do you want me to maybe send an email to your teacher and ask them to whatever? And he said no, and he's adamant he doesn't want me involved, so I'm trying to honor that. So I hate it, but we have to do things like, I need you, last week it was like, okay, sometime this week you need to ask your teacher, go to her during smart period. They have a 30-minute period where they can go to a teacher and catch up on things that they've missed or whatever every day. I said, go to her at, during smart period. She may not be able to help you then if she's helping somebody, but make an appointment after school or whatever. So a week goes by, oh, no, I didn't do it. It's just like he doesn't really realize the magnitude of it. You know, it's just not on the radar. And then so this week it was like, okay, now – you want me to call? You try? No, no, no. I was like, okay, so you have to the end of this week or, and then I have to start saying the or else's. And I really hate to do that, but I don't, I feel like I gave him opportunities. We did this together. We made goals and he said, I'm going to study this many minutes a day. And then I have to remind him about studying this many minutes a day. I mean, we've kind of taken aim and re-aimed, and I'm really trying to resist the temptation to swoop because he's really not taking care of this on his own. I feel like
so what
trying
it sounds
to get curious
like,
is difficult.
Yeah, no, it sounds like what you're really trying to do is to figure out how to hold him accountable and scaffold at the same time, and to know when to scaffold and when not to scaffold and what to do when they say, I got it, and what that really means, and some of this other stuff. And it's a really normal reaction. In fact, we talked about this again. We talked about this yesterday in the Tuesday group, and I think it's this time of year there's this sort of, okay, the semester's almost over, we got to kind of figure out how to get you across the finish line here. So so it sounds like a couple of you, and I know I'm dealing with it right now too, it's the kind of how to figure out how to engage them and how to help them own as much as they can and scaffold where they can. So let's talk about today's topic. Let me double check. Did anybody else join? Nope, just still the three of you guys. Awesome. So we are on page 31 and 32 of the workbook this week. And we are talking about systems and structures. And we do this one last, and it's interesting because this is the thing that most people are like, I need a system, I need a structure, I need something to do. And we're so action-oriented that this is kind of where we – naturally, as parents want to start. The challenge is that if we don't kind of take into account the things we focused on over the last couple of lessons, the positivity and the relationship and the brain and the realistic expectations, that we end up kind of jumping in with systems and structures that don't work very effectively. And the other piece I would add is in taking aim is another important piece of that, because part of why we take aim is that we don't want to overwhelm ourselves, we don't want to overwhelm our kids, and the same thing is true with systems and structures. And systems and structures are really designed to accommodate the challenges of executive function. So whether it's kind of knowing what to do and when to do it, or which is an activation challenge with executive function, or remembering things, which is a working memory challenge of executive function. There are all kinds of structures and systems and rewards and, you know, reminders and restarters and all kinds of things that we can use. But what I really want to focus in on today is, you know, a couple of things. One is getting buy-in. And especially for our groups, because we've got older teens, it's so critical that we're involving them in any system or structure development, because what we're teaching them is, you know, our real goal is not to get the homework turned in, although it's really important this time of year to get the homework turned in. We're really trying to help them to learn how to set their brain up for success so that, you know, if right now they're having a hard time remembering or capturing assignments in class, that translates as an adult. It's like, how do I remember to do that thing for my partner that I said I was going to do? Or how do I remember to do that thing that I said I'd do for my boss? Or how do I make sure that when I, you know, get started on a project around my home that I actually am able to finish it? So we're really kind of, we're not just focused on the thing that needs to be done now. We're also helping our kids to develop the life skills so that they can learn how to use their brain. And you know, they can help set their brain up for success. And I think about a friend of mine, he's 50 years old. He's not ADHD, but I, you know, whenever I watch him, he like gets to the back door and he says, phone, keys, coat, go. And he said that every day, probably for the last 10 years of his life at his back door. But he does it as a way of reminding himself, okay, these are the things I need to make sure that I have on my way out the door. And it's a structure that he's set up for himself to make it easy. But he knows that he needs that. And if tomorrow he needed to remember to do something else, he could create a similar mnemonic for himself because he knows that that's the way that his brain remembers. So part of this, again, is about helping our kids to do the things they need to do. But a bigger part of this is helping them to learn how to use systems and structures for themselves. So buy-in is important. Making it easy for everyone is important. You know, not trying too much that, you know, point systems are a great example of a system or a structure, but if you have points for this and they get points taken away from that and then they get rewards for this and consequences for that, I mean, it ends up being so confusing and hard to track that nobody can keep up with it. We want them to be flexible because we know that the ADHD brain loves novelty. And so a system or a structure might work really, really well for about a week or two, but then all of a sudden it doesn't work. And we can't tell why, and it's really because the ADHD brain is kind of bored with whatever the structure was. So we've got to kind of switch it up and change it up, be a little flexible. And then the other piece of it is to focus on the process. And this is really important. I think a lot of times when we talk about things like grades and systems or structures or rewards around grades, I was talking to a client on a call last week, and you know she had a reward system, a point system, something associated with grades, and you know, it's like if you get all A's and B's, then you get, you know, fill in the blank. I can't remember what the reward was. But the challenge with that was that the reward was so far away. So if you're thinking about what's going on now versus the end of the semester, which is when that final grade is due, and if you think about all the components it takes to just even getting one grade up to an A or an B, and then I think, Jane, you were mentioning this, it's kind of like, is it the homework assignments not being turned in? Is it poor performance on tests? Is it, you know, class interaction, you know, what, you know, there's so many different components of that, that if you focus on that end point, which is the, if you get an A, you get to dot, 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 we're going to miss a huge opportunity to really help our kids to be successful because they are going to be less motivated by something that feels so far away and is such a big piece rather than something very specific, which is when you spend 2 hours focusing on your homework tonight, you know, here's the reward that you could have for, you know, for doing this one thing now. And so it's not so much about finishing the homework as it is spending time focusing on the homework. So with that, let me just pause and ask what thoughts you guys have around systems and structures.
Well, this is Jane again. I read the paper, and I understand the buy-in and the other areas. I'm not quite sure about how to go about setting up how to get him engaged without being turned off by the conversation, because as soon as he hears the word school or grades, it kind of shuts down pretty fast.
Yeah. No, and it's hard. And so I guess the question is, if you were to, as an outsider, and obviously you can't get into his head, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but if you were to evaluate his motivation to do well in school, scale is 0 to 10, how motivated is he to do well?
I would say probably 5 or 6, because I get
okay, so kind of in between.
Yeah, he wants to pass, but he doesn't care whether it's really, really good. And I don't either, tell you the truth. If he gets a D at this point, at least he can pass, you know, the class, but with Fs, you know, that's really
so,
the problem.
And so here's the second question to ask. On a scale of 0 to 10, same scale, how confident do you think he is in his ability to do well in school?
1.
Okay. So here's the piece of it. So you've got a kid who's really motivated but doesn't feel confident. And so that's the real challenge. The challenge isn't getting the homework done. The challenge is, how do I inspire my child, or how do I help get him back to the table to feel like this is something he can actually do? So does your child need a scaffold, or does he need a champion, or does he need a kick in the pants, or does he need a – what do you think he needs?
I think he needs a champion, probably, or kick in the pants, both.
I'm guessing you've tried the kick in the pants thing before. We usually all have, that, right?
Yeah, 15 years of that, and that never worked.
It never worked. Okay, so my guess is that, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you've tried for 15 years and it didn't work, my guess is the kick in the pants is not what he needs right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Even though you feel like it, it's like, dude, how'd you get here again? Again. You know, it's mind-boggling, and they're there. So if you were going to be his champion, Jane, knowing that the goal line is getting as much of this, you know, figuring out how to resolve the F and turn it into a D or a C or whatever is reasonable, what would that look like?
Probably say, I know you can do it. I just can see you do. I don't know. That's what I probably would say. I know you can do this. You've done it before. And if we take it little piece by piece,
yeah,
a little at a time.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking about kind of that tool of compassion, Jane. It's kind of like when we start with, I want to talk about school. You know, if we start with kind of, how's it going, and, you know, how's it, you know, I noticed this, how does it feel, how you're doing about what's going on at school. I mean, it's part of this, the structure that's kind of coming up with when we're having a hard time engaging our kids in conversations about school, the structure that comes up for me is asking permission and holding them accountable. So instead of saying, you know, I want you to go online and check out blah. You know, you say, I want to talk to you. When is a good time to talk? You know, so you're asking permission at each step. So it's not, can we talk? It's you know, your boundary is you're holding them accountable to have a conversation. So I want to talk. When's a good time for you? I don't know. I'm really upset. Well, I get it. You're having a rough afternoon. When can I check back with you so that we can set a time? I mean, this is exactly what I did at my house with my daughter yesterday. It's like, you hold them accountable to have the conversation, but you put it in their court as much as you can for when it happens. And you decide, you know, is it okay for it to last, you know, if they're having a really bad day, are you going to push them to try to have the conversation on their really bad day? Or are you going to be able to take a breath and say, you know what, the world won't end if we wait till tomorrow, but tomorrow it's got to happen.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So it's the structure is with the older teen, every point along the way, I'm giving them as much power as I can give them, and I'm asking permission.
And then when we talk, I would say, if he says okay tonight, and then we sit down and we talk, then do I say, do you want to sit down and come up with a plan with me? Because he won't be able to come up with a plan. I know.
Right. So this is the piece of the scaffolding and the, you know, so it's kind of like, if you start with, what do you think needs to happen? You know, so again, it's the ball in his court. How does that play out?
You're asking me how would that play out? I would just ask that question, and he might just say, I need to do better on my quizzes or tests, but I don't think he would. That would be his general, but he needs to have a specific
Okay. So what question could you ask from there that would hold him accountable for the next level of detail?
I could say, what would you like to do in English to pull up your grade? The way I asked yesterday was, Joshua, what happened to Wuthering Heights? How could you fail that test? That was not the right way. I didn't really say how could you fail.
It's so easy to get triggered, Jane.
What is the vocabulary? I mean, 51, come on.
Yeah, it's hard. It doesn't make any sense at all, does it? So
I
want to tell
you, Jane.
Time.
I love Wuthering Heights.
Yeah,
he liked it too.
I know my husband
vocabulary.
Hates it, though. He'd have probably made a 51.
Yeah, man. Well, so let's go back. But I want to go back to the conversation about systems and structures. So where do you guys notice the systems and structures are working really well for you? Where are you noticing that it's really hard?
I think I still personally love the systems and structures idea, but I feel like maybe sometimes when I hand them to my son and say, what do you think we could do to help us remember this or whatever, sometimes, honestly, he will come up with something. I'll sit it at the bottom of the steps, like with the dish, and when I go to come up, I'll know it's there. So this is a great sort of system or structure. But then sometimes when it's something more complex, like a math grade, you know, he looks at me like, he has that heart. So I have a tendency to sort of swoop in and say, here's all the systems and structures. Aren't you proud? And I sort of skip the buy-in step, I think, sometimes, or even just asking permission. You know, I'm like, I'm ready to have this conversation now, and I start it. And I know better than that, but the asking permission part I really should do. What he usually does to me is says, I don't want to talk about it right now. And I'll say, okay, that's fine. We need to talk about it by whatever time you want to tell me when you want to talk about it, and sometimes he'll give me a time. But I still tend to swoop in with the structures. What we need to do is this many math problems a day of this, and then I sort of say, is that okay? Instead of, what do you think we should
do? Instead of, what do you want to do?
Yeah. Swoop in
well,
my structure.
Yeah.
I take the buy-in part and say, here's what you got to do.
Yeah, well, and sometimes we need systems and structures for our own systems and structures, right? So there's kind of two reasons. One is kind of like, so we don't swoop in, we need a system and a structure, and I'll tell you about that in a second.
Right.
And then sometimes it's so we remember, you know, so we're talking about the, you know, we'll talk about it tomorrow after school. Okay, so, if your child agrees to talk to you about something tomorrow after school, is it also realistic to ask them to remember to do it? No, we've got to remember to do it and say, okay, yesterday when we chatted, we're going to talk this afternoon after school. I'm going to need a reminder in my calendar at 2 o'clock to say, don't forget to ask Jacob about X, Y, and Z, because I'm going to totally forget that we agreed that we talked about it today, and it's going to fall out the window. So sometimes we need those systems and structures for ourselves. The swooping in piece, so this is one that I've personally worked on with a lot of clients. It's what you do when they say, I don't know, right? So that you say, honey, what do you want to do about X, Y, and Z? And they say, I don't know. And I actually have a structure that I use. The first thing I say is, well, think about it for a second. And I actually do this with anybody who says, I don't know to me. I guess I say that sometimes to my clients, and sometimes I say that to my adult friends. But the first thing I say is, well, think about it for a minute. And then I give them a second to process. And it's like sometimes they'll just pop up with an answer right away because they just didn't feel like they wanted to deal with the pressure. And then they're like, I'm not really sure. I can't think about it right now. And you're like, well, let me check back in with you before dinner or in an hour or whatever feels like a reasonable amount of time. And I'm sure you'll come up with some ideas by then. And so the second step is to plant the seed and to set the accountability. So we're going to, I know you'll come up with an idea, and I'll check back in with you to see if you have an idea. And then then you come back and it's like, well, I thought about it and I really still can't come up with an idea. It's like, well, what do you think about coming up with an idea together? So then you involve yourself in the process. You get permission and maybe you brainstorm together, or maybe, you know, you just kind of say, well, I've got some ideas. Maybe you can throw out some ideas and then you can decide what you want to do. But so at each step in the process, you're adding more and more scaffolding. The first one was, you know, what do you want to do? Kind of open-ended. The last one was, I know you want to do something. Here are three ideas I have. Which one do you want to pick? So you're still leaving them a choice and leaving it in their court as to how they want to handle it. But we're, you know, the least independent is I give you several options and you choose. So that's just one structure that I like to use for that specific example of what do you do when your child says, I don't know. So other thoughts.
Is a system and structure such as come home and do your homework for an hour and then take a break for 15 minutes and then do it for another half hour?
Yeah.
Would that be a system and structure?
Yep, it would, because what you're noticing is that, you know, the brain needs a break, and so you're building in that brain break time. A system and a structure would be like if you know that your kid has a difficult time with transitioning off of video games or something like that, setting a timer for every 10 minutes and, you know, taking a quick break and, you know, doing a lap around the living room would be a system and structure. A reward chart, an alarm on an iPhone. I mean, all of those things are structures.
Okay.
So Jody, when you think about this kind of approach for Christmas, where do you think is the place to start as you kind of map this out with your son?
I really like the system you just proposed. I think, and one thing that we can do is pose this question soon, before he gets home, to give him some time to think about it. Basically, hey, you've got a month ahead of you. It's a lot of time. That's great for you. But you realize that how things will turn out if there's a lot of laying around. And let him think about it before he gets home. You know, put the ball in his court in terms of how he wants to plan his time. And then I think that me getting curious about how he feels about it, I think both my kids, they end up regretting it. They regret when they squander their time. You know, whether it's a time period when they have free time or when they've blown off homework or other obligations, there's a lot of regret. So maybe there are questions that I can ask them. One, to get them thinking about their own solutions, but also for me to get an idea of where they stand and why, you know, they choose not to activate, or that's probably not right, but you know what I mean. Like they might choose to lay around and watch TV, and before they know it, their whole Saturday's gone.
Right. Well, what's coming up for me as you're saying that is kind of not only what's their plan, but what do they want you to do when you notice that they're not following their plan. You know, so if I come in and you've said, okay, I'm only going to do video games from 2 to 4 in the afternoon, I'm totally making that up, but it's kind of like, if I come in and I notice that it's 10 in the morning and you're already on your video games, what do you want me to do?
Okay, good.
So it's kind of like, what is your intention, what role can I play, and what do you want me to do if I notice that you're off your plan?
Okay. I think my son is a little less receptive to that than my daughter, but yeah. Yeah, he tends to get a little bit more stubborn, but and he's older.
Yeah, and it's hard
but not more mature, but older, you know.
Right, and it's how do you hold, again, it's that balance between scaffolding and accountability. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, I get that you're 18 and you're living on your own at college, and it's hard for me to sit and watch you doing stuff that you've already said that you really don't, would rather not do. What should I do about that?
Right.
So since there's only three of you, we have time for some laser coaching. I don't know, Jody, since we're kind of talking, is there anything beyond that that would be helpful for you as you're kind of planning the next steps with your son?
Yeah, I've spent all these years swooping in personally, so I've been trying to back off on that. But then the boundary issue. So when I said that, you know, the tensions will rise here at our house if people are sleeping on screens the whole time, people, you know, an adult has to yell, turn the TV off or whatever, go do something. How you know, let them own their system. Let them own the fact that, you know, when they think about it, they don't want to squander their time. But we also have to have our boundaries and enforce those boundaries.
Okay.
And
so what do you
I definitely
think?
Had
would it, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, I definitely had this issue even, you know, with homework over the years. You know, you
yeah.
sit down, do your homework, and you can't, you have to get that done. The boundary issues versus scaffolding and versus them owning their own process.
Right. So there's kind of, so another structure that I use for this is kind of like, I think about three different ways to approach parenting generally. Any situation, I can be authoritative, which is, I'm going to put in the boundary. This is what I think should happen. This is my role as a parent. I can be reactive, responsive, and have it be up to them and let them take the lead, and then I react to that. Or we can collaborate together. And so as you think about this idea of kind of setting boundaries, is it something that you want to kind of start by saying, this is my boundary? Do you want to ask them what they think a reasonable boundary is, or do you want to partner together to come up with a family boundary?
Well, I think ideally we would have a family boundary that works for us, knowing that we know better, though, right? I mean, if my son said, well, I think 8 hours on the computer is perfectly legitimate, that's not okay.
Okay. So how do you set that up so that you can put it in his court as much as possible and also have the opportunity to, I don't know what you would call it, veto power or what language you would use for, but it sounds like you kind of like you want him to set the boundary as long as it's within a reasonable limit.
Yeah.
How do you set up that conversation?
I don't know. I mean, do I explain where I'm coming from and why? Like, he should know. I mean, he's old enough, he should know, but
well, what are your choices?
I mean,
you can start by saying, this is what I think a boundary is. You can start by saying, what's your intention, and then react to it. Or you can say, you know, what are a couple ideas, and how do we figure out which one we should do? I mean, there's lots of different ways to approach it. But he's 18, is that right?
He's actually 20.
20, sorry. He's 20.
Yeah.
So he's 20. So, is this one of those sort of, ideally it's his intention and you check it to make sure that it's not completely unrealistic? Or is this a mom's going to draw the line on the sand to start with? Which way is the more consistent?
It's going to be so much better if he can set a boundary and an intention. And
okay.
Hopefully that would be a reasonable one.
Okay.
And I can see how having the conversation in the right way empowers him. I see how that could really work well. If we're having a really open conversation about, you know, how do you want to spend your life, basically? Do you want to be in front of a screen versus being productive, whatever, that we could it could open things up that he would develop reasonable boundaries on his own.
So what are some things that you will say that can open up that conversation?
I think that I would start by saying that he's got this really great opportunity of a month off. And, you know, all to the possibilities of what he can do with that time. And then ask him what his thoughts are on that. Like, what does he see himself doing?
Okay.
Is that helpful?
How does it sound? I mean, it's...
You know, it sounds good, and they're, you know, I'm sure this is the way it is with every kid. I mean, it's the way with all of my kids. You know, sometimes they're receptive to that, and sometimes they're not. So I really like that idea of introducing the idea and saying, let's get back to that. I think that as with all of our kids in any given situation, if they feel like they're on the spot, you know, they may want to hide. They may want to do anything but talk to us. But if I plant the seed and then come back to it, I can see it being more successful. And giving him ownership is probably going to be a lot more effective.
Awesome. How does that feel as the start of a plan for you?
It sounds great. I'm glad that I threw that out there because it's kind of been weighing on me. Oh, it's definitely been weighing on me ever since Thanksgiving break. So that's awesome.
So, Jane or Tina, I don't know which direction to go. Jane, are you still spinning? Or are you feeling like you're starting to come up with a plan? Where are you at?
Well, I was looking at what exactly I would say to him, and I'm thinking that it just sounds a little like, uh-oh, she's going to want to talk to me. If I use your words and say, I want to talk to you, when is a good time for you? So I'm giving the time for him, but he's probably going to think, oh, brother. I was wondering how I could word
it. Well, hang on a second. So, Jane, so it's kind of like if what's going on is you can't say the word school without causing a trigger is what I'm hearing. So you've got a problem inside a problem. And so what I would challenge you to do is to start with the challenge that you have, which is you can't even bring up the subject with him without it becoming a hot mess. And so I'm going to challenge you to collaborate with him to solve that problem. So how could you introduce that issue to him to say, buddy, I need to be able to talk to you about school. And it feels like every time I bring up the subject, you roll your eyes, you want to go hide in your room, or you get mad at me. And I can't help you to be successful in school if we can't even talk about it. What are we going to do?
Okay, so that's my first question to him is when is a good time for you? Because when I first bring it up, it definitely probably won't be a good time, I'm sure. So then I'll do that, and then when we sit down, I wrote down my notes here. I was going to use the compassion, because I really am compassionate with him. I told him I'm sorry he was struggling in school, and I really am, and I want to... then say to him, and so what do you think needs to happen? Just taking your words verbatim here.
How do you think that will play out for him when you say that?
He might come up with something. And then I might need to help him come up with something.
How likely is he to get triggered in the middle of that conversation?
He won't, as long as I don't trigger him by making him feel badly about himself.
How hard is that going to be for you to stay in that space?
Well, it's not going to be too hard because I think I need to get a handle on this and I don't want to make things worse.
Yeah.
The problem is one to make him know the seriousness of it. Like, do you not know? I didn't say it like that.
So Jane, how old is your son?
16.
Do you think he doesn't know in his heart?
That he's failing so many classes?
Yeah.
I think he kind of has like an ostrich in the sand, head in the sand kind of thing.
Well, and it's a normal reaction. I mean, this is the thing. It's like if things are so terrible that it looks like it's beyond hope, some large percentage of the population just kind of sticks their head in the sand and goes, oh, I can't even look at this. That's what flight looks like. Go back to your champion. What would your champion do for him in that moment?
Say, I would like to help you with this so you can feel good about yourself and about your schoolwork.
Yeah. How do you feel about this approach as a way to help you to move the situation forward?
I feel good.
Tina?
Yeah.
So is there anything we got just a few minutes here?
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking about my conversation with my son and, you know, how I'm going to ask him about this. I've sort of said, okay, at the end of this week, and he did talk to his math teacher on Monday, on the first day, and he did tell me, he's like, well, what did she say? I said, what are you going to say? I got this. I said, well, you know, just be sure you ask her, do you have missing assignments? Do you whatever? So he goes and says, what's up with my grade? I do my homework. I do my test. He told me how he said it. It was kind of, okay, well, at least he said it. And he said, yeah, she just says that I just need more practice. So I get from that there's not a missing assignment issue. So I guess my next thing, I just left it to that because it was enough that he had met the goal that he had actually asked his teacher about it. So I just left it alone. And so at some point he has to hit the science teacher. Those are the two we're working on. And at that point, I'm really just going to say, okay, we need to have a conversation about that. I need to hear your plan for, you know, helping yourself in these classes. And he's probably not going to want to do it whenever I bring it up, but I'll ask him about making a time to do so. I really have put the ball in his court. I could have taken care of this weeks ago if I'd have just sent an email. You don't know how many times I typed it and didn't hit the send button. It's hard. And I was like, no, just hang on for a little bit longer. I'm sort of letting him fail forward and see. Yeah, well, here was your – he honestly, when I said to him, you realize if you fail this class, you can't move to the next grade. You have to have four masks. And he's right on the border. And at one point he had an 80 and now we're like at a 58. And so, you know, you realize you won't be able to move forward. And when I said that, he didn't even realize, oh my gosh, you mean I'd have to take this class again? And that was his motivation to ask her. He's like, well, I don't want to have to take it again. I mean, in his mind, I didn't even realize that he didn't even really understand. You can't just lollygag through this. You have to actually make a certain grade and get a certain credit before you can even move to the next. I just took it for granted that he knew that.
Yeah. The thing that's coming out for me, Tina, as you're talking more than anything else, is that you're holding him accountable for something large,
yeah,
and you're holding him accountable for the individual stuff of it. So it's kind of like you need to talk to the math teacher, you need to talk to the English teacher, you need to talk to the science teacher.
Right.
When are you going to do each one of those? You know, so it's kind of like at each step, you're holding him accountable. Instead of holding him accountable for the big piece, you're also helping him to divide it into smaller pieces so that he can see.
Because there's no need for us to make a plan if we don't know the problem. It would be so easy for me to call him or send an email and say, hey, what's the problem? Are we disorganized? But I'm trying to teach him to solve his own problems, even if he has the worst grade because of it, or even if it takes us a little longer to get there. And so if we can just have the talk and then maybe next week. I really did have to get to the point that I hate to get to, which is, you know, either have to take away some privilege until you get this done. I really hate to get to that point, but sometimes I get to my wit's end because he doesn't have the motivation to get it done, you know, then I feel like, I don't know if that's right or wrong to sort of use all those things as leverage that he really loves and sort of hold him hostage. I don't know if that contributes to the positivity of the relationship.
So hang on a second. So on a scale, it's a motivation, right? And so the question is it motivating and is it building him up or is it bringing him down?
Well, it definitely gets it done. And I'm not sure if it brings him up or brings him down. I think it, I don't know that it affects him personally. I just think it makes him annoyed with me, which is why I wonder if it's affecting the positivity of the relationship. I've actually thought about maybe I should just hire a coach or a tutor and just take myself out of the situation altogether.
Well, and it might be an interesting, I'll plant a seed here if you're open, but this is a great opportunity for a conversation about motivation, which is, you know, I notice that every time I threaten to take something away from you, it motivates you, but that's not a very effective way to live your life because it's fear-based and your brain needs motivation.
Yeah.
So what are some other things that we could do that would motivate you to get such stuff done? You know, I'm thinking about conversations with my son where I'll say, dude, you need a motivation to get out of bed. I can certainly threaten to take something away from you, but that doesn't feel good for either of us.
No.
What are you going to do to motivate yourself out of bed right now? How does that shift things for you?
Yeah. I'm really just trying to, no matter what I say or do, I'm trying to stop myself from swooping. I'm trying to just stop myself and say, let him try. Because I'm so set up in my mind that he can't do it. He probably senses that, and he won't do it. So what I'm trying to do is really step back to see what he actually can do and to tell myself, you don't really know what he can do or what he's capable of doing. You just think you know.
Yeah. So let's do our wrap up and then we can kind of translate that, Tina, for you in terms of what you're going to do with that in terms of action. How's that sound?
Okay.
So on page 32, there's four questions that we always ask at the end of each of these calls. Take a note or two, and I would love to hear at least a takeaway and an action step from everybody. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity, takeaway, or aha? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So jot down some notes, and I would love to hear from all of you, at least an aha and an action item.
Well, this is Jane, and I have for my setting myself up for success, which is usually my hardest one to come up with, is today to be his champion, because I think if he sees that I'm not there to criticize him but to be his champion, he'll feel more likely to want to do things. I tell him that all the time now. I say, Joshua, what do you think? I do this, I do that, do the others because I love you and I want, you know. But anyway.
So what was one aha you had, Jane, in this conversation?
Well, I don't really have an aha. I just have those conversation starters. When is a good time for us to talk, and then to say, what do you think needs to happen? So I guess my aha would be involving him in the process more so than me taking ownership of the process. Because I've already sent those emails out. I sent two. Because I got frantic. Four F's makes you frantic. But I think that involving him in the process is an aha more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that part of this, it sounds like, is really measuring yourself and noticing when are you getting triggered and how do you manage it. You know, it's kind of like if you notice that you're starting to get frustrated or upset, figuring out how to manage that.
Yes, I can remind myself what my end goal is to have him feel more inclined to be willing to do things instead of just closing down, because typically what will happen is he'll shut down, and that's not what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Who else is left?
This is Jody. Early on, you talked about getting curious, and I've been thinking through this whole call about, okay, you know, why do they squander their time, or, you know, what's going on in their head. And then I thought, in this conversation I have with him, I can talk about what I've noticed and ask him what he thinks about it. So, for example, I've known over the years that when he's active, when he has things to do, he's a happier person. And maybe that will help us get this conversation started. It'll open up his mind to, this is not about me telling him what to do or getting my way. It's about, you know, what's ultimately best for him. So that was my aha and my takeaway. That's my plan. I'm going to talk to him, plant the seed, tell him what I've observed over the years, and then plan to have a conversation with him about his plan for the break.
So the tool you're describing is called mirroring, and it's a great tool if we can do it without judgment to just say, this is what I'm noticing. Not good or bad, just this is what I see. I look forward to hearing how it goes, Jody.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Does everybody feel sufficiently wrapped up? Jane, do you have anything else you want to close up with, or Tina?
No, I'm good.
No, I'm good.
Awesome. All right, so next week is, so this is officially the first December call for PSS because of the holidays, we kind of pushed them into this week. We'll have a PSS call again the week of the 13th. Next week there'll be a Lifeline call on Thursday the 8th at noon. So know that that's there, and we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks,
everybody. Bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.